Okay, so we've been looking at Abraham, and Abraham was a man who God said was a prophet. And we know that he spoke with God, and God made him promises and a covenant. So, and we know that he had God's spirit upon him. So Abraham definitely qualifies as a man of God, even though he is not so titled that way. Now, one other characteristic that seems to be a part of many men of God is that they intercede. They make intercession to God on behalf of other people, asking for forgiveness or for mercy or deliverance. And this is also true of Abraham. So we're going to go to Genesis 13. Genesis 13, and we're going to look at verse 1. Is that right?
Abraham in Egypt?
No. That's not it. Here we go. 18. Sorry. Should have put 18. Yeah, 18.
Genesis 18.
Verse 1. And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day, and lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him, and when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under a tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on. For therefore are ye come to your servant. And they said, So do as thou hast said. And Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah and said, Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran into the herd and fetched a calf, tender and good, and gave it to a young man. And he hasted to dress it, which means he butchered it and, you know, cleaned it up and got it ready for cooking. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. So when he says, you know, I'm going to give you a little bread, that's quite a bit of bread, right? Mm-hmm. He gets actually cakes, and he gets a calf and milk and butter and water. And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and to Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken with age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. And so, you know, it goes on, and she has a child and so on. And then in verse 17, it says, And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed by him, or in him. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. And the Lord said, Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grieving, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom. But Abraham stood yet before the Lord. So we believe those men that came to him were angels, messengers. But then God is talking directly to Abraham. And he's telling him about Sodom and Gomorrah. And he's, you know, it's an evil place and God's aware of it and he's had about enough. And Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? And that's a pretty good question, right? Are you going to destroy good people along with the bad people? Peradventure, which, you know, today in our language you'd say, perhaps, if there be 50 righteous within the city, wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? So, you know, Abraham has boldness here. He's got quite a relationship with God. He says, okay, God, you're gonna destroy this place because of evil. But if there's 50 righteous there, are you going to destroy them? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? You know, so Abraham's saying, you know, you're the just one. You have to do right. And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare the place, all the place, for their sakes. I don't know how many people were in Sodom. Let's say there were 10,000. It was a city, maybe 5,000, who knows, in those days. But God said, if there's 50 righteous men, I'll look past the other evil people because of those 50 righteous. And Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure, there shall lack five of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for a lack of five? And he said, if I find there 40 and five, I will not destroy it. And he, Abraham, spake unto him again and said, peradventure, there shall be 40 found there? And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. This sounds like a haggling at a Mexican marketplace. You know, you go in there and you ask the guy, how much is that sombrero? And he says, 100 pesos. And you go, ah, never mind. And he goes, oh, 50. And you walk away and he goes, 25. That's what Abraham's doing. He's trying to get God to down as far as he can. Verse 30, and he said unto him, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure, there shall 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. So he started at 50, went down to 45, then 40, now he's at 30. And he, Abraham, said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure, there shall be 20 there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, oh, let the Lord not be angry, or let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure, 10 shall be found there. And he said, I shall not destroy it for 10's sake. So he goes from 50 down to 10. If there's 10 righteous men in Sodom, God's not going to do them in. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left off communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. So what does that mean? God said, okay, this conversation's over, right? Because why? Because there wasn't but one righteous man in the whole city. Just one. In verse 19, it says, in verse 1, and there came two angels, chapter 19, verse 1, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. So we know or I hope you know the whole story here, but God sends two angels, and Lot, you know, they look like men, so Lot takes them into his house, and they get threatened, and people are going to, you know, do evil things to them, and Lot protects them and offers his daughters instead of the men. And so these angels, they strike the crowd, the mob, with blindness. And so then God, or the angels, take Lot and his family out of Sodom. And if we go to verse 15, it says, "And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, 'Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city.'" So Abraham interceded not just for Lot, but for the whole city. Kind of like Jesus Christ, that God said that he sent Jesus Christ to save the whole world, and God would have all men to be saved. So Jesus Christ made intercession with his life, with his crucifixion, for the whole world. But not everybody believed, not everybody wanted to be righteous, so not everybody got saved, right? In this case, Abraham made intercession for the whole city. He did his best, but there was only one righteous person. And so those angels say to Lot, "Get out of here." "And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city." And then it goes on, and his wife turns back, and his two daughters go away with Lot. So Lot gets saved, and Lot is spoken of in Peter, and he's called Just Lot or Righteous Lot, because he looked for the coming Messiah. But we see that Abraham made intercession for the whole city. He made intercession, but the only one that was righteous was Lot, and so because of Abraham's heart and life, and because Lot was a righteous man, God saved him. Now, let's look briefly at Isaac's life, Abraham's son and heir. And we're going to go to Genesis chapter 26. Verse 1. It says, "And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, unto Gerar." Remember, Abraham had once gone to Abimelech. And Abimelech took his wife, and then God said to Abimelech, "You and your whole country is going to die, your whole nation is going to die unless you give this man his wife back." And then he gave it back, and then God told Abraham to pray for him, and he was healed. So the Lord appeared unto him and said, "Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee, for unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father." So this is Isaac, Abraham's son, and he's telling him similar things to what he told Abraham in the beginning. And he says, "And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars in heaven, and I will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." And that seed we know to be the coming Christ. And so Isaac got a very similar blessing to Abraham, and he got that promise that the seed that he promised in Genesis 3:15 would come from Isaac. And he goes, "So all the nations, in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. How about that? Because Abraham did what? He obeyed. Simple. He obeyed. What a great thing. And Isaac got the same blessings because of his father. So the promise of the seed was passed on to Isaac. And Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau. And we know what happened with them. Jacob was the younger. They were twins, but Esau came out first, so he was the firstborn and should have got the inheritance. And Jacob instead took his inheritance. They tricked Isaac into blessing Jacob, and he got the inheritance and the blessing. So let's go to Genesis 28. Now, after he gets the blessing, Esau goes and he marries a woman from those areas, from Canaan, the land of Canaan. But Jacob was told by his mother and father to go to the land of his, where his mother came from, and seek out his uncle and marry, find a woman there to marry. So in verse 10 it says, and Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. Haran, remember, is where Abraham came from originally. When God, called him and said, go out into a country where I will show you. And he packed up from Haran and he left. So that's where the family that stayed behind was. And he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows and lay down in that place to sleep. Doesn't sound very comfortable to me. I have feather pillows. He had a stone pillow. He must have been tougher. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the ground, of the earth. Now see, this is Jacob. So God gives that first promise to Abraham, makes a covenant with him. And then he gives a very similar promise to Isaac, that son that came to him in his old age. And now he's given that similar promise again in the promise of the seed to Jacob. And the seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and I will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again unto this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. So what's God saying? I'm not going to leave you. I am not going to desert you until I bring all these promises to pass. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God. And this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took a stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at the first. So later it became what? The city of Bethel, which means house of God. Beth is the letter Beth, but it's represented in the Hebrew language as a house, and El means God, house of God. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. So he was a pretty smart guy, and I guess his grandfather and his father taught him, and he said, you know, this is the promises of God made. And so if he's going to do that, he's going to be my man. He's going to be my God, and I'm going to live for him. So it's a pretty good lineage there from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. So we have the full complement, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And each one was given the blessing from and each one knew God's plan of redemption would come through him. Each one of them knew that the seed, that seed of the woman, would be through their seed. They knew that God's plan of redemption came through them. As we go on through the Old Testament, many times God identifies himself. And the way he identifies himself is that he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which then later on he's called Israel. So it's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. And when the patriarchs are spoken of, it usually is referring to these three men. So Jacob went up to his mother's family and asked for the hand of Laban's youngest daughter, Rachel. But he was given the older sister, Leah. And we're not going to go through the whole record, but Laban tricks him because he wanted his oldest daughter to be married. And Jacob was really in love with Rachel. So he says, well, if you work for me 7 years, you can have my daughter's hand. So he worked 7 years. And it says it went by so fast because he was so in love with Rachel. And so then he gets Rachel's hand. Leah's, instead of getting Rachel's hand, he gets tricked and he marries Leah. And when he sees that, he's upset. And then Laban says, well, if you give me another 7 years labor, you can marry Rachel. So he goes back and he works another 7 years and he gets married to Rachel. And then Leah has children, one after the other. She's pretty fertile. But Rachel is barren, which means she can't have kids. So we're going to go to chapter 30, and we're going to get to verse 17. And God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived and bare Jacob. God bless you. The fifth son. So here, Leah's knocked out a bunch of boys. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire because I have given my maiden to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bare Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. And afterward she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. And God remembered Rachel in verse 22, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son. And God said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. So there's at this point, he's the 11th son. And between Leah and a couple of her handmaidens, they have 10 sons, but Rachel has this one, and he's called Joseph. So it's pretty cool. Now, although Joseph is not in the Christ line, his part in the God's plan of redemption is very important, significant, and his life, what he represents as a foreshadowing of the coming Christ, is amazing. So we're going to look at the life of Joseph, and we won't finish it all tonight, I can tell you now, because we're going to look at a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of great details, but we're going to start into it, and we're going to start in chapter 37. Okay? Verse 1. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, that's one of the handmaids, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Bilhah was Rachel's maid, and she had Dan and Naphtali, and Zilpah was Leah's maid, and she had Gad and Asher. Okay? And all the other ones Leah had except for Joseph, which Rachel had. So anyway, he brings unto his father their evil report. I don't know exactly what that means, except they weren't doing maybe what they were supposed to do, and he told his dad. Now Israel, that's Jacob, because later on in the story of Jacob, God changes his name to Israel, which means father of nations, I think, or prince of nations. I can't remember. Somebody will look it up and tell us. But anyway, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. This coat, more than many colors, it was like a patchwork quilt. It had different colors in it. And it designated him as his father's favorite and that he was the heir. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. So that kind of tells you about his, you talk about sibling rivalries. This is a sibling rivalry to equal anywhere. You might want to just turn that off. So they hated him, and they could not have a peaceful conversation with him. They couldn't have a civil conversation. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed." So he tells them the dream. "For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright." A sheaf is they would collect the grain, right, in a bundle, and they would tie it together, and it would be together. And he says, "His sheaf stood up, upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf." So Joseph's sheaf stood up, and all their sheaves bowed down to his sheaf. In other words, they were honoring him. He was above them. He ruled over them. And his brethren said unto him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. The interesting thing about Joseph is, as we're going to see, he loved God, and he just told the truth. He didn't try to hide stuff. I was reading stuff today and they were saying, well, you know, in his impetuousness of his youth, he was cocky and he put this out there. No, he didn't. God gave him this dream and he spoke what God told him to speak. And he dreamed yet another dream. He told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? So that's what he's saying. He said, the sun and the moon and the stars, which mean his mom, his dad, and his brothers, they were going to bow down to him and he would have dominion over them. And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. So his brothers envied him, they hated him, but his father just, he mulled it over in his mind and he thought about it. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. You know, he was just ready to do whatever his father asked. He said, here I am, send me. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, whether it be well with thy brethren and well with thy flocks, and bring me word again. So he went, he sent him out of the vale of Hebron. Vale would be, you know, a valley. And he came to Shechem. And one of the reasons you'll see he sent him is because he could rely on him to bring back an honest report. Remember in the beginning it said he brought back the evil report of his brethren? You know, they weren't doing right. So he knew that he could count on Joseph to give him an honest report. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. Wow. They see him and they say, what can we do to get rid of this guy? We're tired of him. We want his inheritance. And they said one to another, behold, the dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. Okay, the word pit is an interesting word. It's, you know, they would dig holes in the rocks. And they would be very narrow at the top and wide so that when it rained, they would collect water. Oh. And what do you call it? Can't think of the name now of what you would call it.
The well.
Cistern.
Cistern, yeah. It's like a cistern. And apparently in the Middle East where it's kind of arid and they don't get a lot of rain, there's a lot of these that have been dug throughout ancient times for this purpose. And they took Joseph, and he said, we'll just take him, we'll throw him into one of these cisterns because it's hard to get out of them. You get thrown in there, you could die there. Verse 21, and Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Reuben was the oldest brother, and he didn't like Joseph either, but he wasn't willing to go that far. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, into this cistern that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So Reuben, you know, he's going to save his life and take him back to his father. He's not as crazy as the other ones. And it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was upon him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty and there was no water in it. It had not rained for a while, so fortunately there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Okay? Ishmaelites. Ishmaelites. Abraham had a son before he had Isaac. Ishmael. So these guys are cousins. And they're into the, they're traders. They've become traders and they go into the east, up into Iran or, you know, Persia or India, and they get these spices and they come back down through the land of Canaan and they go into Egypt and they sell it because these spices were used by the Egyptians for their embalming and for medicinal purposes. Like, what does it say here? Myrrh, you know, myrrh was, we know, is the one that was given to Jesus Christ when he's on the cross because it's like an anesthetic. So it helps get rid of pain. But I also read about these caravans and I didn't know that much about them. You know, usually if you see a movie or you see a picture, it's just, you know, a line of camels, right? Uh-huh. You know, a single line of camels. Well, come to find out in ancient times, some of these caravans were huge. And there would be hundreds and sometimes even thousands of camels. And they would be lined up four abreast across, and they would be tied to one another. And then they might go 10 or 15 back, and they'd all be tied together, kind of like a team of horses. And the guys would herd them, and then they would be broken up into companies, you know, different units, and they all had their own name. And this is the way the trade was carried on in the Middle East. And so there were great numbers in these caravans of camels and men, so they had protection from thieves and robbers. And it was, you know, and they moved a lot of merchandise. So anyway, so they see these guys come in verse 26, and Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? You know, okay, if we kill him, great, but we don't get any money out of it. What are we going to get out of it? How about if we sell him? Come on, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. And he is our brother and our flesh, and this, and his brethren were content. So, you know, this is pretty wise. He says, you know, we won't kill him, so the blood won't really be on our hands. We'll be innocent before God, but we'll make a little money out of it. So, then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. So, they sell him for 20 pieces of silver. And the Midianites and the Ishmaelites were together. And Reuben returned unto the pit, the cistern. And behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. He was beside himself because he wanted to return him to his father. But the other nine guys, they made some money out of it. And he returned to his brother and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces, torn to bits, right? That's what it means. Rent in pieces, torn up. Torn to bit. A lion or a wild animal got him and ripped him apart and ate him. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Wow. So what a thing, huh? His brothers sell him into slavery. That's pretty wild, isn't it? For 20 pieces of silver. So in reality, to his father, he's dead. He's as good as dead. We're going to see some parallels between the life of Joseph. We're going to read through this, then we're going to go back, and we're going to see parallels in Joseph's life to the life of Christ. Okay? And it came to pass. Let's see, where are we? Oh, now we're going to skip over to chapter 39. 38 has nothing to do with that. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So this guy Potiphar is a pretty big deal. He's the captain of the guard. That means he's the head of security for the Pharaoh of Egypt. He's, you know, he has access to the Pharaoh, and he's a wealthy man. And it says here, the Lord was with Joseph. He was with him, and he was a prosperous man. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. How did he know? Well, Joseph told him. That's, you know, and it was obvious that he was getting help. Everything he did prospered. And he told Potiphar, he said, "Yeah, my God prospers me. He takes care of me. He watches over me." He spoke for God, and God was with him. Verse 4, and Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put in his hand. Meaning, he became the head servant, the head slave of Potiphar's house. Not just his house, but his household. Everything he owned, his property, his land, his other servants, everything came to Joseph. He made decisions about everything. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. Isn't that great? I looked that up, you know, what that really means. But, you know, see, it says here that Potiphar didn't know anything else except, you know, there was food in front of him, everything was running smoothly, and he didn't have to worry about a thing. And then it says that Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. In the NIV, it says he was well-built and handsome. In the Septuagint, it says he was handsome in form and exceedingly beautiful in countenance. Okay? Now, if you hold your place there and go back to chapter 29, chapter 29 and verse 17, speaking of his mother, it says Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Or in the Septuagint, it says, but Rachel was beautiful in appearance and exceedingly fair in countenance. Mm-hmm. So he took after his mother. Mm-hmm. He was a good-looking guy. He was well-built. He was handsome. He had it all. And God favored him. God was with him, and he prospered in everything he did. And it came to pass, back in chapter 39, verse 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." So you can imagine, here's this wife, and her husband's busy, and she sees this young buck, and he's built, man. He's got it all. He said, "Man, I want a piece of that." But what is she? She's a pagan, right? She's an idol worshiper. So she doesn't have the morals that we would expect. But he refused, and he said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. Now then, can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" He said, you know, he doesn't say, "I'm going to hurt your husband," or "I'm betraying his trust." He says, "It's a sin against God." That's how in tune he was with God. His standard was, "I want to walk with God." You know, it wasn't the sense knowledge stuff that he cared about. He cared about his walk with the Father. And so he says, you know, "I can't sin against God." And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men in the house there within. And she caught him by his garment and saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of the house and said unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." So he's got a false accuser here. "And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled." He was set on fire. He was angry. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But, a great but here, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So even he gets sold into slavery, and God prospers him, and the guy that buys him sets him over his household, and then his wife falsely accuses him, so he gets thrown into prison, but the Lord is with him, and he prospers in everything. So then the head of the prison puts Joseph in charge of all the things in the prison. So no matter what he does, he always gets put in charge, because the God his father, or his God, is with him and causes him to prosper. Now, we don't know how many years this took, but he left home and was sold into slavery around the time he was 17 years old. And I don't think that when he got sold to Potiphar, you know, it happened overnight. It took a while for him to see that everything prospered in Joseph's sight. It doesn't give us a timeline, but we're going to see in the next couple of chapters where things turn around for Joseph, but there are years pass before he actually succeeds and finally comes around to what he becomes. So we're going to stop there at chapter, the end of chapter 39, and then we'll pick it up again next week in chapter, or week after next. Next week we won't have fellowship here, and we won't have any fellowship here on Sunday morning, Christmas Eve either, anybody that's interested, okay? But then the following week, the Tuesday after New Year's, I guess it'll be January 2nd, we will pick up again and we'll be in chapter 40 of Genesis. And we'll find out more about Joseph, and then we'll go back and we'll look at all the cool things and the different little details of how his life parallels many of the things of Jesus Christ, the Savior. Okay, so Father God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for loving us and blessing us, and we thank you for what a beautiful record this is about Joseph and the descendants of Abraham, and how you kept your promises and took care of them all. And we just thank you for that, God, and how you brought about the birth of your son and how he saved us all. So we thank you for that, and we thank you for a great night and a peaceful night for everyone in the name of your son, Jesus Christ. Amen.